right, hello and welcome to Criterion Deep Dives. Here with me today, Mike Poggi. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
Glad to be back. Mike is back, you know, several months later. So we talked about this movie before that we're going to talk about today. And when we first did our episode around Seven Samurai, there was some discussion about potentially doing a double feature. That didn't happen, I think, partly because how long is Seven Samurai? 3.5 hours? 3 hours?
Like 7 hours or something like that, yeah.
Very long. There's 1 hour per samurai.
Right.
But it didn't happen. However, I still watched it, or, you know, had intentions to do this. And then I think with the release of the new Godzilla v. Kong film, we thought, hey, we should revisit that. So Destroy All Monsters. Mike, I believe this is a movie that you suggested because you saw it when browsing through the Criterion channel, and you're like, oh, that would be sweet to talk about. But you're like, no, we have to like talk about something more serious. Like, I have to find something more like, you know, film.
Right.
Yeah.
Cinema. Related.
I have to find something more cinema. Yes. But yeah, so this is a movie that you had seen before. And it was something that I hadn't seen. I realized I hadn't seen a lot of the Godzilla movies. So I believe by what I saw that there are like 36 Godzilla movies. I think that number might just be like the Toho movies. Like not including these like new American movies. How out of that 36, how many movies do you think you've seen of these? Like how many titles?
Man,
if you had to guess,
36, I had to guess. I'd say I've seen at least half of them. I imagine. I think like probably in like the 18 to 20 range. But they all blend together. You know, some of the older ones just like it's hard to, I don't know, distinguish.
Well, at least half of these are just named like Godzilla versus Megalon or Godzilla versus what a Mechagodzilla.
Yeah.
So it does all kind of blend together. And then how did you consume these when you like first saw them?
Yeah, I was a really nerdy and young child, and I just loved the monster genre, and Godzilla was like, I think I went to like a Godzilla-themed birthday party in like second grade for one of my best friends nowadays, even Alan.
Was this sprouting up because of the 98 revival
exactly.
with Matthew Broderick?
Yeah, totally. It totally, there was like this like Godzilla revival, and we were just like consuming any sort of monster media we could get, and like in before the internet, it was really just like hunting down the old VHS tapes and then also like whatever you could find on TV at the time. But really, like, I just remember having like a collection of the VHS tapes that we would just go through and like watch like over and over again as kids.
I kind of feel like, so that movie I think was 98, so I would have been like 6 at the time,
right?
Or 5 or 6, something like that. And I kind of have a vague memory of seeing that movie in theaters, I think, or at least getting excited for it. And I kind of feel like it was probably one of the first movies that I was like looking forward to, excited, that was like a little bit more serious. That wasn't like a Disney movie or something like that. It wasn't like a kid's movie. But I could be totally wrong. But I remember having like a lot of excitement around the Godzilla. And like,
oh, yeah.
You know, obviously you're that young. You don't know any, like, I didn't know any of the other, like, the history or, like, whatever. It was, like, a new thing to me, you know?
Outside of, like, the Star Wars ones, I think Godzilla 98, that was, like, the first, like, movie marketing campaign I remember. Like, I remember, like, they had this huge partnership with, like, Taco Bell, and, like, the Taco Bell dog was, like, doing stuff with Godzilla.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and, like, that was, like, the big, I had, like, this, like...
The toys, like,
yeah,
McDonald's
toys,
right?
Right, yeah. They had, like, a huge, I just, like... One of the first like movie marketing campaigns I remember was for Godzilla 98.
I think for me I was like, oh, Inspector Gadget's in it, wow, okay.
Right.
Like,
yeah. Yeah, well, that's cool. Yeah,
yeah.
I remember none of the supporting cast. I remember Matthew Broderick. I've probably seen the movie like 3 or 4 times at this point in my life. Mm-hmm. But I like remember nothing about it outside of like it being such a departure on the design of Godzilla.
Yes, he looks like a Tyrannosaurus Rex, basically.
And actually, it's a she in that one too,
because
there's
right.
a whole like subplot about like the egg laying,
the baby Godzilla,
the baby Godzillas that look like little raptors or whatever.
Well, it's funny because I was reading about different iterations of Godzilla, and at one point Godzilla is a man, but he has babies through parthenogenesis.
Oh.
Which is a concept referred to in the film Wicker Man, another movie discussed on this podcast.
Classic.
So yeah, like Godzilla is kind of this vessel that you can put like a lot of different ideas into, but Destroy All Monsters came out in 1968, and it's funny because looking at it now, like looking back, it's like the first Godzilla movie, 1954, and then kind of runs through all these iterations that like basically is a precursor to like the idea of a franchise, like the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And from what I understand, this movie, Destroy All Monsters, was supposed to kind of be like, we're putting like Godzilla to bed, like we're like ending this franchise and we're gonna go out with a bang by like including all the monsters, like this big, you know, like this big cacophony of all of them, which obviously we're still talking about it today. We just had a Godzilla movie come out. Like obviously that did not happen.
No.
But seemingly the intention.
Right. And this was the ninth film at that point too, which was like crazy. It's funny you draw the parallels to like a cinematic universe, but yeah, you had nine, like a serialized production of like nine Godzilla movies at this point, over the course of like 10 years basically, or you know, 12 years, whatever it is, from 54 to 68. But yeah, that's they go for it, man, with the amount of monsters that are on screen. I feel like if you weren't a fan of the series, you like, it's kind of hard to keep track of all the names, like you said before, like Manila, Godzilla, Rodan, Mothra, like all Ghidorah, like there's so many names, and they all are, I don't know, if you don't have a lot of experience with it, they all kind of sound the same, right?
Well, some of them just kind of like, some of them are a little bit, because like you have Mothra, who is like its own thing. It's like a little like how do you describe it? Like an arthropod, like little sluggish thing.
Yeah, like a caterpillar kind of thing. Yeah.
And then Rodan is like a pterodactyl, like flying, basically a pterodactyl.
Rodan was always my favorite too. Rodan was like my favorite Godzilla monster.
Okay, interesting. Yeah. There's definitely some cool shots of Rodan in this one. Mm-hmm. You know, I just like, what I love about this movie is that just from the start, it just feels like I was watching like Thomas the Tank Engine, like, the old like British TV show version.
Right.
It's just like, and that sounds like a knock. I don't intend it to be a knock on the movie. It's just like, it has the same look of the camera movement, and because it's all miniaturized.
Right.
The monsters, a lot of them are played by people in suits. In various other methods. I think that was, you know, a lot of the history of the early Godzilla movies. So, but yeah, you kind of get like right from the outset, like introduced to all the monsters, and they literally have like from the helicopter, it's just like, there's Rodan. And it's like, so even if you don't know the monsters or whatever going into this movie, you can learn them pretty easily, I would say.
Right. Nice little casting call at the beginning. Kind of. Yeah. So here's the story thus far. And basically like Godzilla had already like faced every one of these monsters leading up to this point. I think they open up with saying by like the year 1999, humanity has achieved world peace.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Oh, that's good. That's really funny.
Yeah.
The 99. I know.
Yeah.
It's funny too, because like this movie came out in the same year as Space Odyssey, which is for the year 2001. So like, definitely this like looking towards the millennium, like, I don't know. It's interesting to think about like how that would have felt at the time, like in terms of like coming up on this big, like, you know, mark of time.
Right.
But also there's a lot, you know, obviously, in the space race, there's some of that in this movie too, in the sense that there's like a whole, I was about to call it a subplot, but it's actually kind of the main plot, of the movie, is that, there's these aliens, the Kelax, who, are like from the moon, maybe, or from Mars, I forget.
Yeah, there's some extraterrestrial. I'm not really. I can't even really remember where they said they were from. Actually, I think it was supposed to be even like further out than that. Really,
humans have like a very strong presence on the moon in this one. Like, there's a scene where they're out in the village and they like look up. They're like this. It's kind of like this country dude, and he's like looking up with binoculars to like a UFO or something. Before this happens, he's like talking with a military man. He's like, "Oh, my son's on the moon too." Like, it's sort of like this thing that is just like everybody's occupation. Like, everyone's son is like on the moon or whatever. So,
right.
I started also this morning. I watched about half of the original Godzilla, which I don't think I've ever seen. And it was striking to me, like, how different in tone these movies are. Yeah. And I think part of that is just the era of the 50s versus the late 60s and like the experimentation that started with more sci-fi movies. But once again, like Godzilla being created as this sort of like metaphor for nuclear warfare, and obviously like this movie coming 9 years after the bombs were dropped, like it was very relevant to people. And like the opening, you know, the first like 20 to 30 minutes of the Godzilla movie could just play out like any sort of like nuclear anxiety movie. Like you don't even get into the monsters yet, and there's like a really intense sense of dread. And actually it's cool because Seven Samurai, right? The other movie we talked about, 1954, same year as Godzilla, same studio, Toho. So a lot of, you know, a lot of the same sets were probably used. And then what's his name? The actor who plays Kenbe in Seven Samurai, he's like the main like doctor, professor in the original Godzilla. His name is Takashi Shimuro. And yeah, so it's just like, it has the same sense. Like there's scenes in the original Godzilla of people like running around the island, like from place to place, that like, I was just like, oh, this looks exactly like Seven Samurai. They're yeah. kind of in this like country, like rural island. So,
yeah. I think that also brings up a good point. Just, I think recently there's been like a lot of internet hot takes on like the revival of Godzilla in 2014 with like the Bryan Cranston, and then like continuing into this MonsterVerse where it's like, I don't go to Godzilla to see like the human plot. I want to see like monsters punching each other. Mm. And like, I get that. And I understand that a lot of like what these movies
scratches
do
out some of my notes,
right? Like that's fun. You know, that's like fun to, that's fun to watch. And like, especially Godzilla vs. Kong was a great like slugfest, but like primarily I feel like the human element has like always been a plot point in these movies. Like people make it seem like the glory days of Godzilla movies was just him like punching up on other monsters, where like, that's really not the case. Like, and you see it in the first movie, and then you also see it in like Destroy All Monsters with like this whole plot. The major plot of the movie is the alien invasion. You know, it's the scientists right. going to the moon to subvert this. It's the getting the monsters back under control. So I feel like you see like a lot of that where it's like, oh, I just want to see monsters punching each other. It's like, well, like I get that, but that's not really what Godzilla has always been about. You know, the human element has always been like a huge part of the story.
I think it feels so silly when the monsters are so insanely powerful. Like like in the new ones, like it. The CGI is incredible, and like the physics are kind of incredible, but then at the same time I'm watching them and I'm like something this large physically wouldn't be able to move this quickly, like right. the way like Kong jumps from like mountain to mountain and stuff like that. Yeah. And I think that's where like it's those little things where it's like, I'm just like, this is awesome, but like something isn't working for me like visually, and it's like in my subconscious, and I'm like, yeah, I just like, I feel like they should be more plotting and like
the song, lumbering like the, Godzilla like, kind of had that waddle initially, you know, like when he like, yeah, like a waddle in there. Yeah,
like could the weight of the boat actually support a fight between these two, like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know, whatever. It's awesome. Yeah. Like the fight in the middle of the ocean in the new Godzilla Kong movie is awesome.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know what you mean. I don't know, like, but do you feel like the human plot in Destroy All Monsters works though? Because I know what you mean about the first one. I was actually pretty captivated by the first Godzilla, the original human plot. But this one feels much more in line with the sort of like, let's get a bunch of creatures in a room and just have shit blow up. But then they like spend half of the movie doing this whole like subplot with
mind control
and the aliens. And they just like spend too much time in like nondescript sort of, like military base rooms, you know.
Yeah, no, and yeah. I think that kind of goes like with the tone you were getting at with Destroy All Monsters, where like there was this like dread, and it seems like it took itself more seriously with the first Godzilla movie.
Yeah,
but like by the ninth franchise, the ninth episode in the franchise, they were just like, eh, whatever. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's a nature of like the idea of having a ninth movie, like, you know. Unless you're based on books, if you're just like continually adding new movies, you're gonna probably continue to get more like a little bit more ridiculous, you know.
Right.
I mean, I feel like all the Fast and the Furious movies have just continued to get more and more ridiculous. So
yeah. Oh, I can't wait till they make it to the Criterion. We can talk about them finally.
Yeah, I don't know. Episode. Like, yeah, right. Like at some point, the original one, right, or something like that. Like, oh, this is a classic. Like,
yeah. Started it all.
Yeah. So, another thing that I kind of mentioned, but like that captivated me about this was like when I realized, I don't know what I thought at first, but like, cause you first see like Rodan moving like this sort of, and like kind of, I'm like, oh, that's like a puppet or something like that. And I know that there has been puppetry throughout the whole like franchise. But then when I saw Godzilla walking, like he's trying to escape into the ocean, and they like are displaying how here on Monster Island, like they have all these defense systems that like keep the monsters in, and they show like Mothra trying to swim out into the ocean, and there's like this little gas, like he's just like, I'm gonna go back. Same thing happens to Godzilla, but then when he's going back, you can notice, you're like, okay, this is definitely like a human in some sort of suit. And that kind of threw me because my perspective was all off. But then, and I was trying to figure this out, maybe you know, his tail is moving around in a really like lifelike fashion while it's still clearly like a human walking. And I'm like, I don't know exactly how that was done. I was trying to get more info on like behind the scenes footage. And there's a lot of photos of the sets, but I couldn't find a lot of like videos of like, you know, the like, Even the original Godzilla or whatever, like the how they kind of pulled some of those effects off.
I want to say it was a rigging. So like they had like a line attached to his tail so they can kind of control it from the tip of it and yeah. kind of give it like that rhythmic,
some like mechanical like whirling thing.
Yeah. And you know, by that point, I think there had been some developments in what like the suit was capable of. But yeah, I think that there are times in the movie, especially like where the verisimilitude is shattered a little bit. You can definitely tell like, oh yeah, this is just a guy like plodding around.
Yeah.
Like even, you know, you try to throw your mind back to like what was available at that time as far as special effects
yeah.
go, but it's still difficult at some times. You're like, oh well, boy, that was rough.
There's some whiplash too, yeah. both with the human and the monster scenes, because like there's some shots that I think look really cool and like honestly pretty realistic with like just like Rodan flying and the camera's following him, and then it like cuts to a miniaturized city and there's like a really fake explosion or crumbling building.
Right.
So like, and then same thing with like the people. There's I remember at one point there's a shot of this like it's like people escaping Tokyo, I'm pretty sure. I forget which monster's attacking Tokyo, but these monsters make it around so quickly. Like
they do.
In the new movies, they're like, oh, Hollow Earth, that's how they can get from place to place so quickly. But they don't really, you know.
Totally doesn't need to be explained, but yeah.
It doesn't need to be explained.
Yeah.
Somebody's destroying Paris. Or sorry, somebody's destroying Tokyo. And people are running away. And there's some really like obvious green screen with like all this artifacting happening on the edges of the people, and then you cut to like this really cool sort of like on location shot of the main woman like in the foreground up on this building while there's like this whole crowd of people running around downstairs or like down in this like courtyard, and that's all done like totally real like any movie from that era or whatever. And then you cut to this like silly monster shot. It's just kind of funny, like the back and forth. You know, even some of the stuff like in the base with all the humans is like, obviously it's all done totally practically. It's just like people in a room, and it's you got kind of this cool set design with like some of the military command stations that they have, as well as their costume design, where they're in these sort of like red and yellow spacesuits, which honestly look a lot like the spacesuits in Space Odyssey, which is interesting. Shot the same year, but I don't know, but I mean, those are kind of like those iconic spacesuits in Space Odyssey. They look very similar, so I don't know if they were drawing on similar designs or anything like that. But you know, it was like all the same footage used for the moon landing. I guess they're just sharing all
right.
the same
of course.
Equipment and soundstage and everything.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. It was interesting to see what they were trying to do with the human plot. I think there was also a shot later on where, like, I was kind of taken out of it, where like they make it to the moon and like they have this little like tank rover thing that they're rolling out of the rocket ship, and like when it like the gate like lowered on it, it's like basically a little like Hot Wheels car that just like
yeah.
like moves out of the thing.
Yeah, dude, Thomas the Tank Engine.
Exactly. Yeah. Which, you know, 68. I think that for the time period, like do you feel like this was like cutting edge for them? Like this is like FSX, like your special effects, like gold standard at this point? Cause I mean, we're still like 10 years off from Star Wars. And I know like Star Wars was like a huge mm-hmm. achievement, as far as like special effects go. Like, do you feel like what Toho was up to and what like they were doing with these Godzilla films was like pushing the envelope with what could be done for special effects. Or do
I don't
you
know.
Think,
I don't know how hard they were trying. Like, I don't know how hard they were trying to make it look like realistic. Like, I don't know if that was their goal necessarily. I think they were having fun and being playful. Like, I mean, there's some elements of that, but it's like, I wouldn't call it cutting edge, but it's definitely like, some of it's well done. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Once again, to talk about Space Odyssey again, it's like kind of hard to compare, but that movie was cutting edge, I think, in 68 with like what it did and how it achieved like a lot of the effects it did. But that movie's also not as like explosive. Like that movie's more cutting edge in terms of like how does space look and how do objects move in zero or lower gravity, and more like the physics of it than like how would a monster look. Like there's no monsters in that movie, you know what I mean? Like if you look at that movie with the apes, which once again I could point to I got the ape back here from Space Odyssey, since we're using video, the apes like in that movie I think look cool, but those scenes look much more similar to like the scenes that happen in Destroy All Monsters. Like they're people in a suit and they're fighting each other, and it has like a certain rawness to it in the same way that the final battle scene in Destroy All Monsters does, but it doesn't necessarily like look real. I don't know, it's hard to say,
right?
Because when you go too far in the other direction with CGI, then you're like, wait, that's not what animals look like. Like sometimes if you watch footage of a gorilla, you're like, they're like so human-like that you're like, is that a human in a suit right there? You know what I mean? Like it's such a fine line. Like, you know, it's hard to replicate reality, I guess is the point, you know?
Right. Yeah. And then like how you perceive, like what becomes reality in your brain, like when you see something like CGI, like I was thinking now of, and we've just referenced this movie as a joke, in a book club a lot, with talking about like Rampage, you know, where like the gorilla is like the main character, but like I don't even know like if that's what a gorilla is supposed to act like. It's supposed to be a pretty much normal gorilla until like the effects of the plot of like, is that what gorillas actually or look like? But also another great monster movie, any of our monster fans listening right now, goes Rampage, another great beat 'em up. But yeah,
we're in a golden age of the monster movie.
Yeah,
I mean, but actually, like, kind of, there's some great, like, another Bong Joon-ho movie, The Host. I don't know if you've seen that one. That's a good monster movie from, like, a newer... I mean, that's, like, 2006, I want to say. Mm-hmm. And then the Cloverfield movies, I like those movies. I don't know. I know, like, a lot of people kind of hated on the first one, but, like, I always thought it was cool. Like, I don't know. Like I think what I was drawn to was like the verite style, the sort of like found footage style, you know. But I know a lot of people think that's kind of contrived. Maybe it's just like overdone at a certain point, you know.
I've only seen it once, but it was in the theater when I saw it, and it was an absolute experience. It was so cool.
Yeah, like, I agree.
And I also remember the initial trailer for that. Like it's like a really long trailer. And like nothing happens for it, and then all of a sudden there's like a monster attack at the end of it. It's like, what is going on? I thought a lot about what Cloverfield was done really well. I remember at that point, me and Alan being Godzilla nuts, like we were like, oh my god, they're doing Godzilla again! Like this is gonna be like another Godzilla movie, and then like having some measure of disappointment when it turned out to be like something entirely unrelated. But it was still a great movie, especially to see in theater, just like having that experience. Which again, I'm kind of jealous. Like I watched Kong and Godzilla in my living room. I should have like found a theater around me that's playing it. It would have been great to see on the big screen, I think.
Yeah. So Dalton and I saw Godzilla v. Kong in a theater. We masked up, we vaxxed up, we kind of. We're halfway there. It was a lot of fun. I think I probably enjoyed it a lot more because of that experience. Like the loud sound, people clapping when stuff happens. Like once again, this is like only 50 people in the theater because of restrictions, so it's not like a raucous party by any means, but still it's like that kind of communal experience. And it's just like, you know, obviously you're like seeing larger than life things. So I saw Cloverfield in the movie theater too, and I remember being pretty shook.
Right.
I thought it was a cool experience. Like I especially remember, I think like I think it's Cloverfield, unless I'm mixing it up with the original Godzilla, although they, or the 98 Godzilla, they might both happen, but just like people like trying to get on the boat, and then the boat, like there's just not enough people, and it feels like you're watching like a like refugee, like World War II situation or something, like really horrifying, you know, like well done. Different tone from Destroy All Monsters for yes. sure.
Yeah, they I mean, they totally leaned into the campiness by then, you know. I think just having so many, I don't know, each monster is obviously set up as like really powerful, and they all have like their own like
specialty.
Right, they have their own specialty, you know, like what yeah. they can do, and like Rodan flies, and Anguirus has poison, and like that sort of stuff. But like the movie's not that long, you don't have that much time to go into all that. It's kind of just like we're gonna take the toys out of the toy box and just kind of you know, bunk 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 bunk, you know, that whole thing.
Mothra, I don't really understand in this iteration, at least, what Mothra can do.
Yeah, there's always like some pixie dust on the wings. Was always like a like some sort of gas or something. Yeah,
yeah, it's like a Pokemon or something.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. What Godzilla monster type is Mothra? What does he evolve into?
A plant, I think. Right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like thinking like Bulbasaur.
Bug types.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Grass types.
So did you rewatch this recently?
Yes. Like, so I watched it back when we did Seven Samurai, and then I just watched it like maybe like last week or something like that.
So did you like kind of like how did it like differ from like your memory of it in terms of like perception?
Oh,
like
completely.
Is this something you watched as like a young kid?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And like you're so like as a child, like I just you it's in your brain, it's just such like a glory days experience. Like there's you don't remember any of the human stuff or like the weird stuff that we're talking about with like, oh, there's like pixelization and some artifacts and the green. Like I don't remember any of that. I just remember like Ghidorah showing up, being super hyped.
That's just me. Like, that's just me being like after a week of doing green screen for work, just like, oh my God, like, like I can't escape this. Like,
right. You know. The artifacts will haunt me. But no, I don't. And like I said, even as it had been so long since I had seen these older Godzilla films, that like they all in my brain were just blending together. You know, I couldn't tell the difference between this or like, you know, Ghidorah's first appearance or Rodan's first appearance or anything like that.
Right. I kind of assumed this was Ghidorah's first appearance, but then I looked it up and like he had his own movie in like 1964 or something like that. Like,
yeah. The three-headed Ghidorah, the three-headed monster.
Yeah. And that's another point too about like replicating reality is like how could you possibly, even today with like CGI, how can you make a three-headed monster look real? There's no three-headed monsters. Like there's not like, you know.
Right. There's nothing to go off of.
Which
is good that like I think that's kind of what they fell into in 98 with like Zilla was like trying to make it look too much like an iguana, like something that was like grounded in reality. And then like, you kind of got this like weird like half design where like it's better sometimes just to fully lean into like the schlock or fully lean into like your fantasy design and just go for it. Because then it at least has like some identity. Like Ghidorah's got like a really like iconic design, you know, where you're not trying to like I don't know, like ground it too much because, like you said, that it doesn't exist. There's nothing to ground it to, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
I believe I read that the original design of Godzilla was based on a combination of a Tyrannosaurus Rex, an Iguanodon, an alligator, and a Stegosaurus, I want to say, with the scales
the
on the back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is like mostly dinosaurs, obviously. But but the Iguanodon, because I remember the Iguanodon from one of those Jurassic Park movies, and I was like really into the Iguanodon. Now I was like, oh yeah, that's my favorite dinosaur for sure. Like,
right, definitely. You guys like T-Rexes? I like Iguanodons.
Yeah, yeah. They're like the hip, they're like the cool like hipster dinosaur.
Right. Yeah. I also was reading about like some of the origin stuff that like initially the idea for the monster was like, and what they did with like the Gojira. So like the combination of the name was initially like a gorilla and a whale. Like that was like their initial like idea was that this monster being would come from the sea and like it would like wipe out these civilizations. And it was the juxtaposition of a gorilla and a whale. But then eventually they went with like a more like reptilian dinosaur look. And also, like, dinosaurs, how we understood how they looked back then, not, like, how they probably actually looked with all the feathers and that stuff. which still in my brain
it's not
is like
it's not as fun. It's
no,
like
I know I still like haven't like I not like this keeps me up at night or anything. it's, I'm gonna talk about it like it does, but like the whole like dinosaurs probably had feathers, like all of them. They were all like feathered creatures. Like I haven't
fully
accepted that in my brain yet.
You just have to picture like dinosaurs, but like as drag queens, just like very right, like, just really... like wonderful plumage and right. just like yeah.
Very
I know.
Big, yeah.
I know. It's really funny. Like that is an example of like something where you just like put your own interpretation on it. Like a like you probably like somebody was just like they're similar to lizards and they just like, you know, hadn't figured out yet like that extra level, but once again too, like as far as the justification of like why like the justification of like why Godzilla exists or anything like that in the original movie, I think is like very rooted in this sort of like human and economic or environmental anxiety of like basically he's like he's like a sea creature that's like hibernating. He's like ancient prehistoric, like deep underwater caves, and atomic bomb testing in the, you know,
Bikini
Pacific
Atoll.
Ocean. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is like awakens him and also imbues him with like radioactive powers and abilities. And it's just like, it's a cool metaphor. And also it's like both a potential reality, I guess, and a cool metaphor. It's like, yeah, like you're dealing with science that you don't fully understand or like that you don't know what the consequences are going to be, both for like right. humans and the Earth, but also like, yeah, we don't know everything that's in the ocean. Like we don't know, you know, like what if we did nuke a whale and it turned into Godzilla? Like,
I like the existential dread that Godzilla like represents, and I think that is tied a lot in Japanese culture, like with the bomb, you know, like it's such like a destructive force of nature that was like harnessed and targeted like at their culture and at like their civilization. So I think Godzilla like being a metaphor for that is like a really cool like concept, and it's like terrifying, you know. Those sort of like threats always like resonate with me, and it's kind of like you read some of the old like Lovecraftian stuff, like talking about like Cthulhu, like these old gods that are like so unfathomable and like how huge they are and their scale of power. And I think that is like a really great connection to like nuclear science and like the atom bomb.
Yeah,
like we it's almost like our conversation we had about money. Like you can't like picture what $1 billion looks like. It's almost like you can't really picture like how much destructive force is like captured in this one item, you know, this
right,
one thing
right.
that like we've managed to create. Like it is actually unfathomable. Like you can't wrap
like
your head around
there's
how
like
powerful
the tangible, there's like the tangible aspect of like the mushroom cloud, but there's like the intangible or like later tangible aspect of like nuclear fallout and what that
right.
does to humans. And like you can't picture radiation like unless you like need a what do you call it, like a Geiger meter. Like you could be like, if you ever like see people like filming stuff in Chernobyl or whatever, where it looks like a field or whatever,
right.
like yeah. Like Dark Side, you know, like he
right.
he can just go to Chernobyl and
yeah,
it looks totally normal.
Right, he's good to go. The radiation helped him out, apparently.
But once again, yeah, that's a great point because it is like it is hard to fathom, right? And like also, how much did the world at large, the American public, know? Like when we dropped a bomb on Japan, how much did we know at the time about like truly what that bomb was? Like,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah,
the military. Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, I've been giving it a lot of thought recently, and like,
the U.S. government is super problematic, dude.
Well, like you know, I mean, warfare's changed. Like World War II was obviously a crazy time in the world, and I couldn't imagine like living in. You know, we live in a state of war, but I think like as an American public these days, we're so isolated. Like we're so used to being in this perpetual war that it's different than how World War II felt.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know, like, what measures people were willing to go to or could, like, justify in their brain that, like, this is the correct way to end. You know, I don't think
yeah.
I could put my brain there. But I try to think, like, right now, like, if we were going to do it, like, how I would feel as an American citizen, like, being part of the population that, like, my country did this to another country. You know, like, my country dropped 2 atom bombs on different cities and, like, complete annihilation, utter desolation of... hundreds of thousands of people, you know, and then right. like the fallout from that, like you said, not even in the initial attack, but like the fallout from that, I couldn't imagine like going through that as an American these days, or like as someone that would, you know, even living in a country that'd be willing to do that. It's crazy, man. And we did it, you know, like it happened
yeah.
twice, which is just wild. But that's, I mean, it also shows how like desperate we were to end the conflict.
But it's also like interesting just to like, kind of like you're talking about something very serious, which is like important, but like thinking of how that like 9 years later translates into a film about monsters is kind of funny, like, because it seems trivial, but it's also not, like, it's like everything in the world is now imbued through this new lens of like a world-changing event. And I right. sometimes I wonder about COVID, and it's just like, is this gonna be like what colors our lens of like everything going forward, you know what I mean? But it's, once again, it's a little intangible, so it's kind of hard to like, I don't know.
I mean, think of it this way, like 2 points on that. One, about COVID, if there's not like another pandemic in like our children's generation, our kids are never gonna hear the fucking end of it. Like, we're gonna be like talking about
we're
it all the time.
So annoying.
I know, we're gonna be like,
I'm already so annoying. I think I talk about it on every episode of this podcast.
Right. We're gonna be so annoying.
Looking at this movie through the lens of COVID.
Right. Like, so pandemic. Like, oh my god, quarantine. But then
we stayed inside for a whole year.
I know, exactly. And also, like, speaking about privilege, like, I didn't lose my job. I think I got promoted during this time. Like, I feel like I own a lot of privilege on what the pandemic actually looked like for me. Like, I had some family
sure.
tragedy,
yeah.
but like, you know, outside of the family tragedy, like personally, okay, I can afford to stay at home for a year. But anyway, I think like art is coping maybe too, you know, like mm-hmm. what sort of like Godzilla being a response to the bomb as well as like a trauma, like getting this trauma out, you know, like experiencing this as a culture and like
yeah.
creating something out of it. You know?
There's something both like perverse and beautiful about like Godzilla being this like metaphor for like American aggression and imperialism and warfare, and then becoming an American sensation, like
right.
becoming something beloved by Americans. I don't know. It's, once again, I think, like I said, it's a little perverse, but it's also like, this is something from Japanese culture that like in some ways probably eventually over the course of decades like helped bridge some of those gaps and those ties, like
right.
Japanese culture is like pretty beloved for a lot, like Godzilla, anime, a lot of these things. I definitely think that there's like some of those gaps. Mario, Pokemon, like
right. No, I agree. I think like, especially in like the American consciousness, like Japanese culture, I think is held in pretty high regard as far as like mm-hmm. a place for arts and right. like technology. Like, I feel like there was always like an association with cutting edge technology and like Japanese culture.
Yeah.
So,
and we've talked about this before too. Like, when you don't have to spend, you know, 60% of your country's budget on military,
right.
you can invest in those things.
Right, right, right. Yeah,
you can build great. Bullet trains. Like, you can build Godzilla. So one thing I was thinking about when we were talking about that, and you might know this better than me, was there ever a Godzilla movie where like Godzilla was like working for the Japanese government and like another, like I'm picturing like Godzilla versus Kong would be cool in like a World War or like a Cold War or even World War II setting, where basically like the Japanese are like sending Godzilla to attack America, and like Kong is like under the reign of like the American government or something like that.
It's like
or
a
like,
Watchmen meets Godzilla,
yeah.
sort of thing.
Or like, what if you had like a giant bear who was like the Soviet, like the Soviet monster, and like they
down.
Fight, you know?
Yeah.
You say you write that.
Yeah.
I think that'd be a cool spin
Bear
on it of like, they're like these like weapons, you know. I mean, obviously they kind of are in some of these movies, but I feel like most of the Godzilla movies, they don't really have like the government or the military doesn't really have like full control over these beings, you know.
Yeah, I think that it's even past Destroy All Monsters. I think the Destroy All Monsters kind of opened the door to like Godzilla being an ally, and I think in the later, like in the 70s, early 80s, it became very clear that like in the movies, like, Godzilla is going to be the one protecting the humans from whatever he's fighting. You know, so, like, it went away from, like, Godzilla is going to destroy the city because he's this force of nature, to Godzilla's, like, our friend and he's going to protect us.
Yeah.
But I don't think it ever became, like, a political thing. Like, it was always, like, Godzilla's our friend, it's a begrudging ally. Mm-hmm. And it got goofy, man. I mean, so some of the stuff, like, Manila is in this one, but Manila's, like, this little, like...
Yeah, turn little, to your, little, go to your right a little bit.
Yeah, wait, yeah, we'll see right. Him. Is he? Oh, he's
a little
right.
bit more.
He's right. Oh, wait, there he is.
There you go.
There,
yeah.
You can kind
he looks
see
like
him.
He's from there Jim he Henson's Dinosaurs. Like,
yeah, the eyes yeah. are very unsettling. So he's like this like apprentice Godzilla that like Godzilla's training to be like the next protector of the world. And
he's
then,
like an adopted son.
Yeah, he is an adopted son, and it gets goofy, man. And then the Godzilla cartoon introduced like Godzuki. And, like, you would have, like, this eclectic group of adventurers that could, like, summon Godzilla to help, like, solve their problems. And Godzuki was there, too. So, like, they've definitely leaned away from that in, like, the newer installments. They've kind of rebooted it. Like, if anything, like, Godzilla is, like, a begrudging ally, like a dark anti-hero. But, like,
right.
at its height, there was definitely, like, this, like, goofy, like... kind of like a Scooby-Doo feel where like Godzilla's part of the gang, like helping out like the human sort of thing. But I don't think they'd ever got to a point where it was like he's like Japan's mascot and like is going to be yeah. like an agent of imperialism like across
right.
across the globe.
So we talk about some of these things, and then obviously like we've talked about the new Godzilla movie, and like I look at that movie and it's like there's some weird stuff happening, but mostly it's just like a slugfest, and I don't like I have a hard time drawing any sort of like interesting storytelling or like commentary from that, which is okay. But like you were talking about the Cloverfield thing and how it's like, oh shoot, this is gonna be a Godzilla movie. Like, do you think there's like a utility in continuing to like this is like a pet topic of mine, but like a utility in continuing to use like IP to tell the stories? Or is it just like I feel like a lot of like messages or stories that people can try to like put through the like IP like franchise factory can get like essentially watered or bogged down by the weight of the franchise's history. And like it is cool when you have something like Cloverfield that is its own, like it's like, yeah, you can take all this inspiration you want from Godzilla, but you just like do it differently. Like one thing that I've been thinking about, because I've been rewatching and reading about a lot of Paul Thomas Anderson's films, and he has like he has several movies that are kind of based on like these like great men in like whatever, like, you know, like Teddy Roosevelt type figures in the past like 100 years or whatever, but they're like fictionalized versions. Like he does like the L. Ron Hubbard fictionalizes him. He does like sort of the oil magnate with There Will Be Blood. He does in his most recent film Phantom Thread, he's kind of like doing basically like one of the English designers. Like it's all these people that are like based on famous characters, but they're not real. And it's like, to me, that is like a little bit more interesting than a biopic, because you're like, you have a little bit more license. But like, even if everybody knows who you're basing it on, so that's kind of a long-winded question, but I'm just curious your thoughts on, like going forward, like, Godzilla films, like, is that the best place to tell a story? Or, like, if you make your own monster film and you maybe, like, do something else with it, could you, like, I don't know, have more to it a little bit?
Yeah, I think that there's a couple reasons why people struggle with it. So, like, pulling from an IP obviously generates hype automatically. So, like, look at me and the way, like, I lit up when I first saw the Cloverfield trailer, like, thinking, like, I'm a guaranteed ticket. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, because it's Godzilla, I'm going to go.
Right.
But I think that you're right. There wasn't anything to pull from Godzilla vs. King Kong outside of, like, the punching aspect, which was cool. Like, there was nothing. I would say that
there's some podcast commentary
right, which they honestly which is kind of weird, because they also validate like the conspiracy theorists, which is like something we probably don't want to be doing
right now.
Where like the conspiracy theory guy was like right the whole time, but I think this franchise or this iteration of the franchise got there like in record time. Because I want to say like in that first one, the 2014 one with Bryan Cranston, they were still trying to kind of like use Godzilla as like this metaphor for nature that like humans are going to overstep and then like the planet Godzilla is going to come in and course correct for us. And like I think that's basically like the theme of that first like 2014 movie. And then in record time, it got to like in three films, it got to like just this like destroy all monsters, where it's just like a bunch of the slugfest. So I think there is still value.
Well, even the 2019 Godzilla, Godzilla King of the Monsters,
was just like a
2019.
Slugfest.
Yeah.
There was still like the human element a little bit of like overreaching. Like they found Ghidorah in the ice, and they were like, should we wake him or should we not wake him? And
they kind of had a bit of a like Thanos attitude about humans have kind of destroyed the earth and we need to like let nature run its course a little bit or whatever.
Like, Tywin Lannister was like, we need to do
yes.
this.
Yes.
Yeah. God, I love him. Charles Dance. What a great actor.
Have you watched Mank? He plays, the main guy in that.
Really?
Not Herman Mankiewicz, but, William Randolph Hearst. Yeah.
Oh, no.
He's good. Yeah.
Okay. I might have to check that out.
Yeah.
So long-winded answer to your long-winded question. Yeah, I still think there is some value in the in using the IP, if not just for the reality of that some of these stories would not get made unless they had like a vehicle like Godzilla to tell them. So like if you have like an interesting like theme and you think it like lines up with like what Godzilla is capable of delivering, make it a Godzilla movie because I'll be there to buy it. I'm gonna see it.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm an easy ticket on like a lot of movies. There's like a very few movies that I was talking about how I liked Rampage earlier in the podcast. So clearly,
well, Rampage is an example of like they didn't use King Kong. You know what I mean? It's
right.
Like he's his own giant gorilla.
Right, but they did use its own Rampage. Arguably, the video game takes inspiration from Godzilla. It's Godzilla all the way down is what I'm saying as far as like monster films go. But
well, even Godzilla basically was created because they wanted like they were like King Kong's a super successful movie, like we want to do that basically. And there was another, it was like a re-release in the 50s of King Kong, and they were like, we should do something like that. So Godzilla, and that's why it's interesting that it's like this idea of Godzilla and King Kong, like, oh, we're like mixing franchises or whatever, but it's like, no, they're actually kind of always like on the same wavelength a little bit.
Right.
Even though it was RKO Pictures in America with King Kong and then Toho in Japan with Godzilla. But
Speaking of, I mean, for now, the Monsterverse is... Oh, wait, is this what they're calling that? Or is that the
Monsterverse? Whatever.
The Monsterverse. The Monsterverse is done. It's concluded right now. Toho has been pretty silent on what they're going to do next. So who knows,
because basically like Toho has to like sell the copyrights for these characters to Legendary and to Warner or whatever, whoever makes these movies.
So that's on pause right now.
AT&T basically.
Right, yeah, one megacorp has to sell it to another megacorp. Basically, I just saw that Sony like is licensing all their stuff to Netflix. And I was like, again, these megacorps just like tossing their stuff around to each other. There's like three companies. Pretty soon I'll be on like my AT&T. It's crazy. But
I don't mind things turning into franchises, but I like new things that can start and then become their own franchise. Like trying to think of an example. I know there are some, but like, I mean.
Well, so Cloverfield isn't technically a franchise, right? I mean, I know they had like that one with John Goodman. But was that like technically like,
well,
I
think that brings up a conversation of like, aren't there three Cloverfield movies?
There was the
surprise one after the Super Bowl, but then wasn't there one that was
also 10 Cloverfield Lane?
That was the surprise one.
No, the surprise one was the space station one.
Oh yeah, okay.
Right.
Okay.
That like was like Awakening Clover or something like that, and you're right. I forgot about that Netflix one. That was the surprise one after Super Bowl. What a great way to drop a movie, by the way. I always appreciate that. No marketing, just like, and it's available now.
That's cool. Yeah,
it is cool. It's a lot of confidence in your product, which
I think
it's
like
misplaced, but
yeah. I think it's like a question of like what makes something a franchise, which is like obviously an incredibly fine line, but you know, if you just have a couple films, like, is it a franchise? Probably not.
Right. I know what you're getting excited for is the Captain America Godzilla movie that's going to be coming out. Is that what I know that you're pumped
is
for?
That your, real?
No. Your next Disney Plus installation of the MCU, Godzilla versus the Avengers.
Well, I did learn about the run of comics with Godzilla in the Marvel comics. Did you know about that? Yeah.
I did. Yeah. He's one of those, like, yeah, he's just been everywhere, man. I, like, think of, like, the amount of video games I had growing up. Like, there was a Destroy All Monsters video game that you could play, which was a lot of fun. He's been everywhere.
One of my favorite levels from the Luigi's Mansion 3 game that I played recently is, like, you're fighting off ghosts, and, like, one of the, like, floors of the hotel is, like, a film director ghost. And for the final boss scene, you, like, fight a ghost who, like, goes into a Godzilla costume, and you're in this, like, little mini Tokyo city, and he's, like, burning down buildings, and you're, like, trying to, like, suck off his, like, ghost costume off of him. Like, it was just really cool. And, you know, obviously, like, an awesome nod to that. I mean, that's basically what Space Jam, the new Space Jam, is doing, is just putting, like, every, like, you know, like, was it Ready Player One that basically already did that, where it's, like, the Iron Giant and the, yeah.
The Iron Giant, you know, I was, like, reading, again, hot take from the internet, but they, like, go through this whole thing with, like, getting rid of the Pepe Le Pew character because they feel like he's problematic. But then, like, in the montage of WB characters, you got, like, Clockwork Orange characters in there. I was like, we're going to remove Pepe Le Pew, but we're going to keep the Clockwork Orange. Have you guys seen Clockwork Orange? Why is that in Space Jam?
I know. I saw this discourse as well, and I'm terrified because I love Clockwork Orange. It's one of my favorite films. I think it's a great film.
Right.
But all it's going to take is just, like, a little movement to get that film, like, canceled or something. I don't know. It's like I watched it recently, and it's very hard to watch for, like, the modern brain.
Right.
I still think it's a valuable film, but, like, I don't know, man. I think it could be very easily misread.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I just want to protect Kubrick.
I think if anything, Space Jam 2 and, like, is it's kind of like a support in your argument. I think you're getting at with some of these, like, IPs, like, letting them rest and, like, just, like, not. I don't know. It's almost like you're whoring these IPs out to, like, generate clicks or to generate, like, some sort of views. Or it's like, oh, look, we have the Iron Giant and King Kong. Oh, and the cast from Clockwork Orange. And then the Looney Tunes, you know. I think it's, like, maybe.
Like, if we're going to go there, like, put LeBron in a Droog suit and have him gallivant around Neo London and just make Clockwork Orange with LeBron. Like,
oh, my God.
I don't want to see him in a movie with the Droogs if they're not, you know,
not being
committing
Droogs.
Acts of ultraviolence. Like, right. I don't want it.
Right. Right. We should write. We'll post it on LeBron's Instagram, see what he says. I think one of the things that it did, like, it was far above its time was, like, this idea of a cinematic universe, you know, like a continual production of, like, IPs. And, like, we were like, how it's crazy that, like, the MCU is at, like, how many movies or whatever. And it's like, well, okay, well, Godzilla's had, like, 36 movies, you know, like, it's Godzilla, it's, like, James Bond, there's a couple of them that, like, there's, like, almost precursors to, like, this modern phenomenon with cinematic universe. And I don't know how I didn't connect it to my brain, because, you know, like, I'm a big just dweeb for a lot of that. But yeah, I liked how, like, if we were looking at comparison, this was, like, supposed to be set up as, like, the end game of Godzilla, you know, like, we're bringing out all the stops, and the big guns are coming in for this this movie that I think, like, plot wise probably felt kind of flat, but it had a lot of monsters in it, though, so that that's great. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, man, well, thanks for having me on again.
Yeah, thanks, Mike, appreciate it. Talk soon.
Talk to you soon, man.